You are listening to episode 116 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, Princesses, Dragons, and Technology.
Episode 116 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is December the 15th, 2013. I am Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is the Desolation of James Furlough.
Ah, yes! I must admit, though, I only saw part of the movie.
What? How did you only see part of the movie? The trailer?
Well, it just so happened that I was going with a bunch of other sophomore guys, so there was eight of us total, and we got there on time for the movie, which on opening weekend is late. So I ended up sitting in the front row. So I literally, I physically only saw part of the movie.
Oh, I see. You saw 30% of...
I was there for the entire time, all the way to the end of credits, just in case. But I only saw the very center of action. I didn't catch any of the...
I actually
so saw... I know what happened, but...
Yeah. I actually saw it down in Orange County, and because I went to the Disneyland to visit our sister before she leaves there.
Ah, the land of Disney.
And we flew in. I flew into the airport, the Orange County airport, at 10:50. We from the airport, we drove to the movie theater. The movie started at 12:15. Yeah. And like, the theater was, like, basically empty. It was actually kind of weird. We did the 3D IMAX dealio. And then we got to bed at, like, 4 a.m.
48 frames per second?
Heck yeah. And then it was beautiful.
Man, I'm jealous.
And then we went to bed at 4 a.m. And we were in the park by 9:30.
That's disgusting.
5 hours later, yeah. It was rough. If anybody follows me on Instagram or Twitter, which you should, you probably know by this point that I proposed to Belle.
I saw that. You know, if they did want to follow you, what would they have to look up to do?
You'd have to go on to NextWiggin4 would be my Instagram handle. But not quite there yet. Hold off, James. Don't get ahead of us. We still have to do the show opening. But first, I mean, this is an important question. What did you think of the 30% of the movie that you saw?
I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. Lots of action, intrigue. I was ready for part three, and I was like, no, keep going.
But I like where they ended it. I'm glad that they. Having read the book recently. Well, there's a lot of different places they could have ended it. I thought they made a good decision. They left most of the conflicts open, which was nice, because it would have been very easy to close one or two, and you know. But no, it's good. I'm pretty stoked. I'm stoked for the next one.
Yeah.
I
don't want to spoil anything, because I'm pretty sure everyone will go see it at some time. So.
Well... In your defense, it is a like 75-year-old book.
Let me see if I can do this generally enough so no one else will pick up on it unless they've seen it. The part where the last part with Gandalf, that was probably my favorite. That was awesome.
Yeah, I'll agree.
So there you go. I think that was general enough.
I think my favorite moment, I think it was my favorite moment in the book, and definitely hit the spot in the movie, was it's the moment that Bilbo pulls the lever, all the barrels go, and he's like super proud of himself, like he's finally got it together, he's got it figured out, he's doing his thing, and wait. How am I supposed to get out of here?
That was pretty good.
Oh, and I thought they played it perfectly, and it was good. It was great. And I was very pleased. But anyways, we are not here to talk about fairy tale proposals and the desalination of smog. We are here this week, like every week, to talk about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology that they are developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
Yes. I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions. And we are amazing. I think I'll just put that out there. Let me rephrase this. If you want the absolute cutting edge for the thoughts on technology, and dare I say video games, you need to listen to the show.
Jameson. Yeah, it's true.
Because you'll love this, there was this is my Cheaterson article. There was a Forbes article that came out this week. Let me just read a couple paragraphs just real quick here. It says, Nintendo doesn't need to get out of the home console market. It could simply revolutionize it by combining the concept of the home console with its portable success. One of the great features of the Wii U is that if I wanted to, I can simply unplug it from my TV and plug it in next to my bed and play games on the gamepad itself. It makes me wonder, why is the Wii U a home console in the traditional sense at all? Imagine the graphics of the Wii U on an updated version of the 3DS or some new DS machine, and then pair that with some sort of small receiver that allows you to play all your handheld games on any TV. There are Android devices that do this already, but of course, they only play Android games. Nothing even close to on par with Nintendo's first-party offerings. Does that sound familiar to you?
I'm not sure, James, but I'm pretty sure that they listened to our show last week when we said that they should do exactly that.
Yes, there you go. That's actually I posted that on jamesferlow.com, which is a place where you could follow me, and that's exactly what I said. Whoa, Forbes listens to our podcast because that is exactly our idea. So I just wanted to disclose that we are ahead of everybody, and that's why you listen to us.
I have to tell you, I've been playing a lot of Pokemon lately, and if I could like throw it up onto my computer screens, I probably would. It's a pretty fun game. That's actually a really fun game. It's kind of ridiculous. But that's besides the point. So if you want to follow us throughout the week, hear our thoughts, see our pictures, seriously, check out my Instagram picture of me proposing to Belle. It was awesome. You know what the best part about it was? Oh my gosh. Okay, I'm going to get into it a little bit. Best part about it was...
All right, do it.
We were at Ariel's grotto for lunch. It was just like the super swanky restaurant where it was crazy. It was like $130 for the two of us to eat. But there's a 50% discount because she's, you know, one time 50% discount for employees. Oh, baby. So yeah, it was an expensive dinner lunch thing, but you know, anyway. You only live once, I suppose. It's funny. There were no price tags. So I didn't really know what I was getting into, except actually the biggest indicator that I might have bitten off more than I could chew was the fact that that there was unlimited fountain sodas. Which, in a theme park, that's a sign.
Yeah.
So, anyways, we're...
That reminds me of that one dinner we did in Seattle when you were doing your thing, and we went to that fish place on the wharf.
Yeah.
And we walked in, and I think we spent over $100 then, and it was just like, wow. I can't believe we just did that.
Yeah. Pretty much. But what's cool about this place is, you know, obviously it's in like, California. Dude, this is California Adventure. And,
Wait, it was an Ariel's Grotto in California Adventure?
Yeah, which is a Disney property. Right. I know. They do all the Ariel stuff in Disney's California Adventure. And anyway, so when you go in, you get to like meet Ariel, you know, and like take pictures with her and stuff, and I'm pretty cute. So she was a little bit smitten with me. Actually, what really happened was, like, she was really cute. She was a good-looking girl, and a princess. And
she's Ariel.
Yeah, no, exactly. They did a good job casting. And then, and as, like, where we were sitting, she, like, walked out past us, and, like, I was, like, watching and, like, waving as she went by. She's, like, waving back to us. But she's, like, waving for the kids. And I'm, like, some 27-year-old, like, hey, hiya. And, yeah, I know. Well, thankfully, I don't think it came across as creepy. But it was, like, the last thing she did, like, before she goes into, like, her break room. She, like, does one last turn around. And I'm pretty sure, like, I was the only one looking at her, like, at that point. Everybody else was, like, you know, paying attention to their food and whatnot. And she blew me a kiss. I was like, I'm, like, super excited. And I was so funny because I started out, like, totally not into it. Like, whatever. Like, I'm not going to play along with this game of, like, getting into the cast and everything. Whatever. And then, like, as soon as we were, like, doing it, I was like, this is so fun. And, so, you know, you're supposed to, like, enter, and then they had all the princesses come and do dinner or lunch, like, come and say hi and take pictures and stuff. And, Belle's my favorite. She's my girl. And, just in general. And so when Belle came through, like, I guess it's not uncommon for guys to propose to girls, and our sister, who's a cast member, informed me of this.
You know, to
the princesses.
Okay.
Yeah.
Characters. Yeah, all right.
Yeah. And by not uncommon, I mean, like, it happens. Not a lot, but it happens. Well,
you were, like, in a line of three guys waiting
Exactly. So I decided to pull a guest on and got down on a knee and asked her to marry me. And she told me, literally, she's like, she was pretty cute about it. She was just, like, she was really surprised, it seemed like. But she, like, once she pulled in her composure, she was like, I think you're going to have to talk to the Beast about that. He might have something to say. And I was like, dang it. That's a good point. I forgot about that. And, but went well. It was otherwise it was good. It was awesome. Got some really good pictures out of it that I posted to Instagram. Check it out if you want to follow me. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at MackieDePro. It was a good time. Yeah, it was. I kind of wanted to brag a little bit, but that's good. And then the best part was when Ariel came back out of the break room after all the girls had, you know, like, gone into their, like, backstage. She came back out.
Yep.
She gave me the dirtiest look I think I've ever gotten from a girl. Oh my gosh.
Whoa.
She was actually upset with me. I'm sorry. But it's kind of cool. It's fun. It's a good time. Good time in Disneyland.
And you can follow me at James Furlow on Twitter or jamesfurlow.com.
You don't have any cool stories?
No, not like that.
No, that's all right. Don't worry about it. So
the snow all melted. I mean, it was really anticlimactic to get anything. Oh, yeah, how about this? Our water heater isn't as hot as it used to be. So, but, and here's my, I'm the luckiest guy in the world. Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's just warm enough that it's a lukewarm shower. And so I'm like, works for me. I'll just go faster.
Yeah.
And Jesse's like, oh, okay, maybe. We'll see. Like, you know, I would think that most women would be like, no, we're buying a new water heater no matter what. I'm like, well, let's just wait it out. Let's see if it's as bad as we think it is.
Let's see if it's as bad as we think it is. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So imagine you get out of the shower and there's, you know, it's on full hot, but there's no steam in the bathroom. I mean, it's like that level.
That sounds awful.
Well, you know.
No, I don't know. Go away.
You know, our pipes froze and everything was bad. So
that's true.
That happens sometimes.
You know,
the worst part is I'm already starting to think about my goals that I'm going to set for next year.
Yeah.
Which, P.S., I'm going to hit both of my goals this year, which is fantastic. And but one of them I was like, oh, you know, it'd be really nice to have no large expenses. And I haven't quite defined what equals large yet, But I'm like, oh, jeez, I need to kind of decide if I'm going to replace this thing in the next week or two. So I'm going to hit my goal.
Jeez.
So that's the exciting thing in my life, but I didn't tweet that out, so, you know.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you do go. There you do go. So, am I up second, first, third?
No, I'll go.
Okay, go for it.
Trying to think of the transition. You know, talking about sharing stories and what gets talked about and what doesn't get talked about, there is a cool article on Pando Daily that asks the question, which gets more attention, Snapchat or SpaceX? You know, on one hand, you got Snapchat.
You have
messages and pictures that disappear. One could generously call it a communication tool. With no, you know, that one of their things is that they're going through, a frat boy type of dispute. They have no clear revenue model, and they just turned down $3 billion acquisition from Facebook.
That is going to be the biggest mistake of their lives.
You think so?
I think so. The more and more I think about it, I've read a couple of different articles and stuff. I mean, I might be wrong, but it's like one of the big things that everybody's talking about is that they did a big round of angel investing, and they're like the evaluation that the angels gave them was only like, you know, the equivalent based on the shares and how much they bought was the equivalent of like $1.2 billion. They're like the simple fact of the matter is that everybody else that has any like reasonable like knowledge of the company and faith in the company values the company way less than that. And Facebook was basically like, Facebook was giving them money, and they're going to be, and I don't think they're ever going to find that much value.
But the question is like, okay, today it's at like $1.5 billion. Where do they see it 5 years from now? Where it was like when Facebook started to take off, you know, and before Mark took on any money whatsoever, everybody knew it was going to be public and it was going to be huge.
Right.
And the question, you know, but they were still different valuation points, you know, where they weren't valued at $1 billion at first. You know, it was a few hundred million. And so, you know, there's, depending on where you are in the growth cycle, is, you know, here's how much they're worth. And so the question is, okay, yeah, they're worth 1.5 today. Do they think they're going to get to 3?
You know, it's
2-5 years.
It's funny. I'm going to go back to what I've always said. The difference between MySpace and Facebook was is that I really do believe the difference between MySpace and Facebook wasn't who was using it or why they were using it or the exclusivity or there was a whole slew of different reasons that people went over from transition from one to the other. But the difference that made the difference, the foundational difference, was Mark Zuckerberg and his attitude about technology. He's an incredible engineer, and he values incredible engineering. And they are a technology company that outclassed MySpace in every capacity. And when you look at that, you know, it's the stupid little things. Facebook's never gone down. They've got incredible data management. They actually build servers. They're great. And everything from the original version of Facebook to the current version of Facebook has been virtually inscrutable. I mean, there's been issues that have come up from, you know, security and some bugs and stuff, but for the most part, it's unbelievable how solid the product is every single time. And the thing is that with Snapchat, what you have is a really good idea with decent execution. And now the question becomes, whereas like Facebook is unbelievable execution, so even with only decent ideas, it's still the best execution of decent ideas. And every once in a while, they come up with a really good idea. And so I think my problem with Snapchat is it's like there's nowhere for them to go because I don't know if they're going to come up with another. I don't think they have another brilliant idea to come up with. It's just most human beings don't do that twice. And I don't think they have the execution to really, you know, to make up that last, you know, to turn decent ideas into good ideas. They turned a fantastic idea into a really good idea because they didn't execute it on as well as they could. And it's little things. It's like the fact that the pictures aren't actually deleted. They took a shortcut. They went in and they just changed the extension. And it's, you know, and you sit there and you go, that's a minor detail to some degree, but if you send a lot of pictures, your phone still stores those pictures. That's eating up your storage. It's really a bug. That's not good. That's not how it should be working. You know, not to mention
it's lazy design.
Exactly. It's lazy design, and I think that that's the, you know, I'm judging people that I've never met before that are worth way more than me. But I think the reality of it is that you know, just the overall solidness of the app has increased a lot as they've been able to hire more and more better engineers. But I don't think that's the passion of the guys that are in charge. I think the reason why Facebook and Google are so fantastic top to bottom is because the guys on top are fanatics about the details, which, you know, is sort of reminiscent of, you know, one Steve Jobs, you know, in that they're fanatic about the details. And that makes a difference.
So, speaking of fanatic about details, and to bring us back onto the actual point of this. we are left field in it right now. Yeah. There is another company that one could argue is fanatical about the details.
Yes.
Because they are literally doing rocket science.
Yeah.
We're talking about SpaceX. You know, they've been around for 11 years. They just launched a rocket that put a satellite into orbit, which is pretty cool. They did it for like $55 million, which is compared to like the $1 to $260 million normally offered.
It's a big difference.
You know, they're doing pretty good. So the question was, who gets more online attention? Was it care to guess?
Snapchat.
Yep, not even close. Some examples here. If you look at the New York Times, they published 540 articles with the word Snapchat in it. For that same period of time, published 100 articles, SpaceX. So 540 versus 100 in the New York Times. Fantastic. For Google Trends, Snapchat gets like 21 times the search size than SpaceX. And then this was interesting. For Twitter followers, SpaceX has 278, whereas Snapchat only has 120. But when you look at actual tweets, Snapchat has more. They have 3.9 million tweets, whereas SpaceX has 40,000. So they may have more followers, but Snapchat is clearly part of the the conversation. And then when they actually looked at specific tech blog sites, ours isn't on there for some reason, but they Snapchat had 73,000 results, whereas SpaceX had 44,000 results. So, you know, all of this saying that goes kind of on and on. You know, and part of it is, they go, the lesson here, pop culture is easier than Mars.
I'm like, yeah.
A story about a fight between founders sells better than a story about the space race.
It's true.
And then they said disappearing photos are more compelling than a disappearing ecosystem, which is weird.
That last one, I'm not sure I follow, but okay.
Yeah, I would just say I think the first one's super important. You know, well, I look and go, like, with Snapchat, it's something that I can try and test out and touch and feel, and, you know, it's relevant to my life, it's immediately relevant to my life, I should say.
Right.
Whereas SpaceX, you know, it's removed.
And, you know, I don't want to downplay.
And it's rocket science.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I don't want to downplay the fact that, you know, Snapchat is a fantastic idea. Especially from an entertainment perspective, like it was a stroke of brilliance. It's incredibly simple and incredibly compelling.
How about this? This is the one that me just kind of goes like, wow. We have a father who we love. I love, at least. I'm pretty sure you would say the same thing.
Yes.
Refuses to get on the Facebook. Refuses. I mean, it's to the point now where, I mean, he'll never get on.
Right.
He eventually discovered Pinterest, and we've talked about this. He literally will surf Pinterest, find a picture, take a screenshot of it on his iPad, and mail the picture of the screenshot of the Pinterest website. Right? I mean,
yeah.
You're just like, so you're like, all right, Dad, that does not count. That's the kind of person that we're talking about. You know, Twitter, ha. You know, whatever. He does do email. He does email, and I'll admit. And I still haven't figured out his logic for sending it from his AOL versus his Gmail account, but that's a different story altogether. but here's the crazy part. Again, a person who does not sign up for Facebook, he doesn't even know that that Instagram exists type thing.
Yeah.
He's, by the way, he has an iPad. He's got an iPhone. He's got a computer, right? I mean, we're talking about someone who he gets and enjoys technology and that kind of stuff.
He's not a Luddite. He's just a, he's a cultural Luddite.
Participates in online forums for, you know, things that he's interested in, cars and motorcycles and stuff. Okay, so that's, I just want to paint the picture of who it is who we're talking about. That man signed up for Snapchat.
Yeah, I know.
I don't, which is, I like had to help him because I'm like, dude, this isn't that hard. But, you know, he doesn't sign up for normal social sites. And, you know, he's talking about like, how do I search my friends? Do I want to give him access to my contact book? I don't know. I'm like, yeah, you do. Trust me. You know, but he signed up for it, right? Mm-hmm. So somehow they did something that at least got him to say, yeah, I'm interested. And don't say it's because everyone else in the family was on it, because we're all on Facebook.
Yeah, no.
He wants nothing to do with it.
I do not want to diminish the fact that I wish, I hope and pray that one day I can come up with an idea as great as Snapchat. Like
Which, by the way, just I do want to put one thing out there for the record.
Yeah.
If you send him a Snapchat photo, he replies back to you with a text message. So he's still not quite using it the way he's supposed to, which is pretty still, funny.
Yeah.
But,
he took a screenshot of a picture that Lisa sent him from the weekend. It's not the point, Dad.
I know. He did that with me, too. And I wrote him back. I was like, I did like a video of me doing this and wrote like, no, what are you doing? Can't do that. You got caught. And then he called me. I was like, what did I do wrong?
Yeah, but it's that's yeah. Right. I mean, it's funny. Every once in a while, I try to wrap my head around the idea of like, you know, when you talk about like the lean startup and simplify, you know, distill an idea down to its simplest essence and then execute on that.
Moisture, just like, by the way, is the essence
exactly of beauty. Yeah, I just can't even, like, I can't even, man, that was a stroke of genius. It really was, and, you know, it's just because it's compelling, man. It's compelling.
But that's the other weird part, too. It's not even kind of intuitive at all. Right? Yeah. Like, the cool part about the internet is that you can do something and it's there.
It's yeah.
Just, you know, it's searchable, it's findable, it's permanent, it's linkable, all that stuff. And now you're like, oh, or not.
Yeah. It's the end, and I mean, that's part of the brilliance of it. It's like the antithesis of, oh man, and it really only works.
But anyways,
like,
but I would still say, as cool as that is, SpaceX is cooler
long term, it's definitely gonna that's gonna change the world way more than disappearing photos ever will.
Yeah, and I guess originally they did an article like, you know, they were originally looking at you know, they were talking about Elon Musk, and they were comparing SpaceX to Tesla, and they were like, Tesla gets, you know, a lot more press than SpaceX.
It's a big deal, though.
Well, it would be interesting to actually compare Tesla to Snapchat, you know, just to see there a correlation to that. But yeah, anyways, that was my article. It was just talking about who gets more attention, which is really more of a commentary on society and culture as opposed to what's actually cool, but you know, that's the way it is, right?
It's true.
What is it? Sex, violence, and bad stuff.
Rock and roll.
Sells newspapers or something.
And so rock and roll.
I don't feel like that was the quote, but
I don't think it was either. But so there's a problem. It's you know, everybody. What does everybody want? Everybody wants.
Well,
Google
so
Fiber.
What? Oh well, I was gonna say Jesse was singing a song this morning, a Beatles song. She was like, I can sing that on here, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe I'll just say it because I can't
actually
sing it.
I don't. But, yeah, I think the problem here is that no search algorithm is going to recognize the song you're about
so
to sing.
So it was the "All You Need Is Love," right?
All
so
you she's need singing. Is love.
Yeah, so she was singing that, and so she was like, you know, "All you need is love," and I in the background was going, "And the internet."
Yeah,
that was my feeling, which I think helps speak to what you're about to talk about here.
So Google,
so that's
Google
all really, I need, the internet.
Yeah, Google really wants to deliver gigabyte Ethernet, which is 1,000 megabits per second. It's a lot. It's fast. It's fast. Much faster than most of us. I've got like 10. That would be three orders of magnitude larger, which would be pretty exciting. Two orders of magnitude, which would be exciting. There is one difficulty there, is that it really requires fiber, fiber optics. There's not really a lot of metallic materials that we know of that we haven't figured out a way to this is basically what it comes down to. We haven't figured out a way to get up to that speed using copper, using, metals. We can do it with light and fiber, but most of our infrastructure for communication is copper. So there's this dilemma here. Well, good news, everybody. Just recently, who was it? What group was it? The International Telecommunications Union yesterday, this is like Tuesday or Thursday, gave initial approval to a data transmission standard capable of 500 megabits per second in both directions over existing telephone wires. This new standard, G.Fast, can be used on phone lines within 250 meters of a distribution point. And they're actually saying like it's probably closer to 100 meters, which is about a football field length. But why this is a big deal is because essentially what it means is that you don't have to run fiber up to people's houses.
Cool.
Because that's really wicked expensive. Basically what this does is really shorten the length of the amount of fiber that you have to install. So you do really big fiber bundles running up to these things, and then you can distribute to all the houses, and then you can do half a gigabyte per second, which is still ridiculously fast, and it's a great transitional technology. Basically allows everybody to accelerate what they're doing, accelerate the rollout of, you know, really fast internet. And what you'll probably see early on is your 300 megabit per seconds, which is what AT&T is pushing right now, before you necessarily get to your 1,000 or your gigabyte, gigabit. And so, you know, what laid the groundwork for this was they were doing lab demonstrations of 1.3 gigabits per second over 70 meters, but that was unidirectionally, so you split that in half, take off 10%, you get down to 500 megabits per second, bidirectionally. So pretty exciting. And what they're saying is that this is really going to be, this might be the solution to the quote, the last mile, which is the real hang up on how to, if there's a lot of fiber out there, how do you make the transition from fiber to the house? And the answer is this, pretty exciting. They also say that this will probably have a big impact on your 4K and 8K TVs because right now there's like no content out there because how would you deliver it? It requires too much bandwidth. This is how you would deliver it.
Cool.
Yeah. So.
Except the problem with this is that I'm cheap. And so I will still continue to pay for my stupid slow internet and I don't have a television.
Yeah. I buy $100 meals at Disneyland, so I'll probably get the best.
Not all of us are high rollers, you know.
Yeah, man. It's true.
Though, I'm super proud. I just got a... I got a... I gotta toot my own horn for just a little bit here. We paid off another loan this this month. Super excited. Now all we got left are the big ones.
The big ones.
But
yeah.
I think we could do it in a year and a half.
Holy cow.
So the plan was originally 5 years. I think we'll be able to do it all. We're just finishing up year two right now.
Whoa.
And and we're halfway.
That's right aggressive.
Now. So it's ridiculously aggressive. And so I think we'll do it in at least 2 years, but I think we could do it in a year and a half, and we'll be consumer debt free.
Nice.
I'm not going to pay off my mortgages. We have like $500,000 out for that, and that's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Well,
you know, what are you going to do?
Could be worse.
We make money on those, so it's all right. But, so I guess what I'm saying, besides just, you know, tuning my own horn, is, you know, maybe a year and a half from now when we got a little more flexibility there, let this tech mature just a little bit, I'll be like, all right, I'm interested. Of course, we still only have Comcast. That's my only other alternative. I'm on, what am I with now? CenturyLink, and I don't see them. They're DSL, so they will never. Yeah. Well, I don't know. This is internet phone lines, right? So.
Yeah, and don't get your hopes up.
They're striving to be the low-cost provider, so.
And they're winning? they're achieving their goals.
Actually, it was super frustrating today. We were watching a show on Hulu this afternoon, and the show kept skipping and pausing and, you know, refreshing and stuff. And I instantly opened up my app, and, you know, the second it does it, I'm like, all right, what's my speed? I was actually getting my advertised speed for the first time ever, and Hulu still wasn't working, so we switched over to Netflix and watched a movie instead. But I was just like, what the heck, man? This is like the first time since I moved here in the 6 months we've been here that I've actually gotten the 5 megabytes they promised me. And the internet's not working.
that's obnoxious. Well, you know, the problem with that is, and this is something that's becoming more and more and more and more apparent as an issue.
Oh, is that your... Okay, go, keep going. Sorry, I got distracted. I'll write it down. Go.
Okay, it's not necessarily the fact that... Why, you totally distracted me. Oh, not necessarily. I mean, that may not be Hulu's fault, and that may not be your internet's fault. That might be
throttling
from the buffering issue for how they throttle buffering. It's like that's one of the big things with YouTube is that they won't throttle your buffer speed. They'll throttle your buffer amount, which is like feels like you're splitting hairs, but there's some obnoxious stuff that the ISPs are doing right now.
Yeah, I don't know what they were doing, but it was annoying. My guess, though, it could have been, for all I know, similar deal where the speed was actually where it was supposed to be, so it was putting through a higher quality video.
Oh, yeah, that could be
it. And it just, they picked just a slightly higher quality than it should have been.
Yeah.
And, you know, because, you know, they do that kind of stuff, and so that's my guess is maybe what happened. Man, it was frustrating.
Yeah.
It's like, what the heck? I finally am getting my speed. It's not much, and they never give it to me. And I always, like, it's a good thing they gave me, like, that whatever it was, like, 6 month or 9 month deal where I'm paying, like, $25 a month for internet access. I'm like, all right, you know, I'll deal with whatever they give me for that price.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Anyways. So, all that to say, yeah, it'd be cool if I could get it, but I'm afraid I'm going to be too cheap.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well,
so when is it supposed to go live? Like, start seeing this happening?
Probably over the next year or two.
Cool. All right, that's actually pretty fast.
Yeah, here we go. Scipio Marketing VP Michael Westman told the Register that field trials should be followed by live deployments in late 2014 or 2015. Other essentials estimates have the deployment expected for 2016. So, you know, 2 to 3 years.
That's reasonable.
Pretty awesome.
That is awesome. That is cool. Definitely, you know, you can see certain trends happening in tech, right? Where it's like, obviously, Snapchat is the story we just talked about. But it feels like, to some degree, social has been solved. And though there'll always be something. and it will always dominate the headlines. But you definitely get the sense that there are people focusing and making a lot of progress on other aspects of the internet. You know, one of them being, you know, just making it faster so that we can start to, like you talked about, delivering 4K video or doing real-time communication stuff. Exactly. And there's another place where I think that technology is really starting to infiltrate, you know, the culture, the world, whatever you want to call it, and that is in the medical field. I'm super excited about this, and I think this is something that will just get bigger and bigger, not just on the biotech front, which I think will be very cool, because we are starting to apply big data and we're getting better sensors and stuff like that. You know, and so we're going to start to be able to pool experience. Yeah, that was what I saw and what distracted me. So what is that?
This is the Fitbit. Yeah, for those of you that are listening and not watching, this is the Fitbit Flex. I wasted another pile of cash because I've lost two of my really expensive Fitbit devices. This one hopefully won't get lost though, because it's actually attached to me in a more permanent way. Here's hoping.
Have you ever worn a watch in your life?
Not my adult life. I used to wear one during middle school.
Okay, yeah, that counts. I was just wondering. Okay.
Yeah, I wore one for a long time. I wore one through most of high school. I stopped wearing it because it just became too much of a hassle to take it on and off during football. But I had that band, the watch band on your wrist for the longest time of. Actually, you know what?
Are you talking about the suntan? Is that what?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Hey.
And you know, it's funny. You want to know why I stopped wearing a watch? Because it was too much of a hassle with football, and I had my cell phone on me all the time.
Right now.
Yeah.
So, do you like it? How long have you had it again?
I've had it since I got it Wednesday, I think. And since I am now, again, the most steps of all of my friends and family that I compete with, I feel pretty good about it. Couple of rough days there.
Well, you're cheating, right? You're swinging your arm. You get a lot more steps.
So actually, this is good. We did a thorough testing.
Where are you at? I've got you at 87,500 for the last 7 days. Ooh, our dad is closely behind you. He's at 85,000. So depending on
but it's for the last 5 days. Dad's for the last 7 days.
Okay, all right. Lisa is at 78.
For the last
Mom is at 29.
Days.
I'm coming in at 24.
Nice.
But I am beating our
You
aunt.
Are so fat. No. It's funny. I actually, that was a big concern of mine because it was like, because it is kind of sensitive. So I have it set to my dominant hand, even though it's on my non-dominant hand. Which is basically makes it less sensitive. So it's really I gotta be seriously like moving. Like it misses steps.
Weird.
I tested it against Lisa's yesterday, which was pretty thorough because we did 30,000 steps in Disneyland. And I started off the day 500 ahead of her and I ended the day 500 ahead of her. So, you know, it might be a percentage or two off, but it's not enough for me to,
wow,
you know,
that sounds accurate.
Yeah, feels accurate. So, you know, it's at least it's comparable. And they made a big deal about the fact that, you know, they went way out of their way to do that. So I'm satisfied with it so far.
Cool.
I'm not cheating. That's my long and short of it.
I know, how much was that one? Is it the same price as the Fitbit one?
It was not this expensive for me, but it was $99.
Same price. All right. Do you see that as the dark horse for future smartwatches? Does that like tell you the time and steps and stuff on there? I can't remember.
No, this one's the there's two wrist versions. This is the Flex. All it has is a little Cylon, you know, LEDs that light up and kind of give you a really simple indication. Then they've got the I don't know what, I can't remember what to call it. The other one. The other one gives you, tells you the time and everything. Okay. It's much more thorough. Yeah, I could totally see that being the future of it. And it's funny, I don't think I'd wear a watch if it didn't have a, you know, something like this built into it.
And that can that do your heart rate or heartbeat or anything?
No, it is a simple pedometer with Bluetooth.
So no steps or
No stairs, but steps. Just
calorie estimates.
Well, it does everything that it needs. It does everything based on steps. So it gives you tells. But you have
to your activity level. Does it tell you that?
Yeah. But it syncs. Okay. It only does it through the phone. It doesn't do it through your. You know, it doesn't indicate anything on the wrist.
Oh, okay. I understand. It tracks it, which syncs to your phone. You just can't see that on your wrist.
Right.
Which I don't look at my Fitbit one for my stats. I open up the app.
Yeah, me too. And that's kind of why I was fine with it. I got to save. It saved me about $60 to do it this way. So,
cool.
Seemed worth it.
Cool. So, you know, sometimes, you know, and I would say the Fitbit is a great way to, you know, to stay fit and to stay healthy. But sometimes you're not healthy. And
sometimes.
when that happens, it's nice to have a doctor that you can talk to help you out. And technology is out there to help you with that too, and so I got two here that I think are cool, that are worth checking out and worth you know, getting excited about. One of them is called Doctor On Demand. It's a service that its goal is to connect patients, consumers, to licensed physicians.
Yeah.
Via an app for, you know, iPhone, Android, tablet. And essentially what you do is you pay $40 for a video call, which they say is pretty comparable to co-payments right now. And they actually want to get it so that you can pay for it via your healthcare spending account or your flexible spending account, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like you normally can today. And yeah, so they, again, the ability is to like do a video conference or a phone call or be able to send them a video call, I guess. I would imagine it would be cool to be able to type in information there. And the only thing that they can't do is they can't do they can't do lab work, or like obviously they can't touch you. To chest something, you know, if you're like, I got chest pains, or, you know, I got stomach pains, they're not going to, you know, like, yeah, you should go to a real, you know, not a real doctor. You should go to a physical doctor.
Yeah.
A real doctor. But their, you know, their whole idea is, sometimes you just got questions and you're not feeling good and you got to talk to a pro. And, instead of going to the office and waiting in line and talking to your doctor for, you know, 10 minutes, you just dial it up on your app and talk to a professional that way.
Right.
And, you know, the idea being that, you know, you're obviously not taking up precious time for your local doctor, which lets them then focus on some of the bigger cases that are going on. And, you know, and obviously if they're away, you can actually get help, that kind of stuff.
So in California, Kaiser Permanente is one of the biggest healthcare providers here.
Yeah.
And they have advice nurses if you're on their program where you can call in and ask questions. And a girl I dated had that service, and it was great. Like, she used it all the time. And you just call in, you'd give them your, you know, Kaiser number, and then they'd let you talk to an advice nurse. And it did exactly what you said. Like,
cool.
It allowed her to, you know, because a lot of times it was like, I'm not doing well, and I think I need to see a doctor, but I'm not sure. Can somebody just settle my nerves on whether I need to or not?
Yeah.
And, you know, and they were biased to, you know, be precautionary, but sometimes they would just say, nah, you're fine, don't worry about it. And that's all you really want, right? I mean, what you're looking for, what we all want is our expert friend, you know? We all want a lawyer as a buddy. We want a doctor as a buddy. We want a, you know, an engineer, you know, electrician as a buddy. So you can just say, hey, I was thinking about this, and I was wondering what your thoughts were. And they can just give you the really quick, you know,
you know, sanity check. And basically that's what it sounds like this is. Is it's just, hey, can you give me a sanity check really quick? Because I don't know. And the nice part about it is it's like, you know, for Kaiser, that's a huge benefit to them because now you're not, you know, you're not taking up the appointment of a doctor, which, you know, for heavily, you know, for health systems where there is already a tremendous number of patients and big wait lines, and sometimes all the person wants is a sanity check. That's as bad for the hospital, you know, who have people who really, you know, have other more important, more immediate issues. And that's cool. No, that's cool. I like that idea. And I like the fact that it's, you know, a simple app and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and these guys can, you know, they are full-time physicians, so they can even give you a prescription if needed.
That's cool.
And, you know, so they can take it the next step further. And like I said, it's all on an app. So, and it's a video call. It's not just over the phone.
Yeah.
So it's got some of that cool stuff. The other one that I thought was interesting was Health Loop. And theirs is for after the doctor visit. So what they do is...
Close the Health Loop?
Yeah, yeah. There was a doctor in San Francisco, Dr. Jordan Schilane. It was Schilane. he was frustrated that, you know, there were people who he was frustrated by their unnoticed or underreported symptoms between visits. You know, so someone would have an issue and they would just, you know, they wouldn't worry about it because it's too much of a pain to go into the doctor's office, and they didn't have a doctor on demand. And so he's like, it just resulted in a lot of emergency care visits that like could have been taken care of earlier. So he actually started it by tracking patient visits with a spreadsheet to help him remember when to do follow-up visits and ask questions. Yeah. And eventually he hired a developer to help him, you know, refine the tool and make it better. And that was eventually turned into Health Loop. And so what it does is it aims to keep doctors, patients, and caregivers better connected between visits by offering clinical information and peer-reviewed follow-up plans that aim to automate the routine aspects of care while tracking patient progress and monitoring clinical areas of concern. So you enter data, and it can analyze it for you to let you know if there's something crazy going on or at least alert the doctor of what's happening. And so, again, they're just trying to make it – this is technology and communication, just trying to make it easier and reduce some of those barriers of you know, actually getting in to speak to a real live doctor.
I like that.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I think that, I mean, it's definitely a space that is slowly but surely heating up, and there hasn't been really anything, I would say, like, huge yet that has totally revolutionized the system outside of a certain government-funded website that we won't go into right now.
You know, I'm actually pretty, I'll be honest, I'm pretty impressed that we've managed to resist the temptation to discuss this on this show. And I'm sure we have listeners that hate that. They want to hear us talk about it because it's, you know, because everybody, almost everybody cares about it. And it's just so fraught with, you can't talk about it without being politically controversial. And it's not what we're about.
Yeah, yeah.
The only thing that's definitely true is they spend too much money, but,
wow.
What program has the government not spent
I like to think, though, that now they've got at least some of the right players on the team to make it happen.
That's true.
Now that they've switched away from Verizon hosting their site to a much more reputable company that is in it for the in it to win it.
Yeah. And they got Google boys, you know, working on their databases and stuff. I mean, I was sexist. I don't actually.
By the way,
know boys
you know
girls, but...
you know who who's now hosting their site, right?
Yep. Hughesy Packard?
That's them.
Oh, baby.
That's them. So hopefully it'll be running better. And if it's not, the transition hasn't happened yet.
It's bureaucrats.
Yeah, yeah. It's not us. So anyways, but yeah, I think these are some cool technologies that are having an impact on the healthcare system and in a positive way. and I think it's cool. I still think the best bang for the buck, honestly, is Fitbit and things like that that help you be healthy just in general so that you reduce the number of visits in total. I think there's, you know, that's the way to, you're going to get your biggest bang there. But
yeah. You know. Well, I love watching those TED Talks about this kind of stuff because, I mean, what's most interesting to me is the idea of, or compelling to me is the idea of the ever-present, you know, surveillance of your body, which I, you know, sounds like horrifyingly 1984.
Quantitative self.
Kind of. Yeah, exactly. But it's, you know, the classic example that I think was the most profound, or I shouldn't say classic, but the most profound example in my mind was the one of that usually when dementia sets in for older people, it's the easiest way to identify it is when you pick up the phone and say, "Hey, Grandma, how you doing?" And it's the delay between from when your grandma says, "Hey, how are you doing?" You know, as dementia sets in, that takes longer and longer and longer. And they said, but the thing is that a computer can detect that delay and how long the delay is taking and do that. It can catch it like 3 years earlier than the average person can, just the trend of it, where they realize that, okay, the delay is taking longer than it should. It's starting to get worse because it's, you know, because it's tracking it over time, comparing it to past data points, you know. And so, and they sit there and they go, you know, especially with dementia, man, if you can get on the drugs that you need 3 years earlier, you can offset, like, the terrible part of the disease, like, settling in by, like, 20 years. I mean, it's ridiculous how long you can put off the inevitable if you start early enough. And, you know, and when you can quantify things like, you know, and there's some amazing tricks for that sort of stuff. And when you can quantify it, you know, it's not just like the Fitbit is looked at as a motivator. It's designed to get you out there, you know, and moving. But there's so much more potential when it comes to actually monitoring and constantly diagnosing, which is why I like the idea of this health loop thing. And because it's about... You know, I don't know if anybody ever watches House, but I get most of my medical ideas from House. That's not true, but I get too many from House. But, you know, he always talks about the fact that he hates the whole body scans. Because you take any random person off the street, you put them in a whole body scan, you'll find 3 things wrong with them. You know, not necessarily the thing that you thought was wrong with them, which is why they don't ever start that way in their diagnosis. And their differential. And, and the point of that is that if you can kind of track all these symptoms, you know what's been there, you know what's you know not there. When a real problem comes up, it helps the doctor know, well, okay, this has been a long-term symptom. This symptom hasn't necessarily gotten better or worse, so we can ignore that. We can take that off the table. And it's just a more thorough history. Or you know, this has been a symptom for a really long time, and it's finally, you know, become unbearable or whatever. You know, and so that's fascinating. That's interesting. And then I agree, man. I think that's going to be huge in the future, as time goes on. But very exciting, especially if we can keep our health system together to some semblance of a degree. Mm-hmm. Which, oh man, I really want.
Let's talk about robots. I can tell.
I want to work for Google.
Okay.
And there's the reason for it is not because of the purchase they made this last week. That is only one small part of it. Have you seen those walking dogs? No, well, that is a stupid question.
Have I seen walking dogs?
Have you seen those videos of the robots, the four-legged robots, like, walking up hillsides and, like, soldiers, like, kicking them and they're, like, doing all sorts of crazy stuff?
No.
Well, it would be more exciting if you had.
Oh, so, yeah, I've totally seen that. It's amazing.
So there's this company called Boston Dynamics. They're really a research company. They work with DARPA all the time, but they're like these pioneers of different types of, pedaled walkers, bipedaled, quad-pedaled, walking robots. And they've done some really cool work. Yeah, we've talked about it on the show before. One of the freakiest things that they've shown is...
I was paying attention, apparently.
Obviously, is one of they fixed one of their big walking ones up with this, like, hand-grabbing thing. And what they show is, like, it walks up, picks up a cinder block, and then the whole thing, like, jumps and throws it over its back, and you could just chuck bricks. Like a long distance.
That sounds really dangerous.
Yeah. It looked incredibly dangerous, which is why everybody was like, what in the world are you guys doing? Those things could kill us! And they're like, yeah, that's like the point. They're military weapons. Mm-hmm. Well, Google confirmed on Friday that it has completed the acquisition of Boston Dynamics, the company responsible for the robots.
Huh.
And that's, everybody goes big because the big dog project is what these robots are called, have gotten a lot of attention, like 15 million views on YouTube attention, like big, and they're a constant competitor in DARPA. They love this kind of stuff. This is what they do. But the really big deal behind all of this is that not necessarily that they bought Boston
Are they Dynamics. Based? Are they based in Boston?
I don't think so.
Okay. I'm not totally
Massachusetts.
Surprised,
but yeah, it was.
That would be Boston.
It
okay.
was. Yeah. He's an MIT dude, of course, because they're so smart.
So and, if you want to work for them, you'd have to move to Boston.
Well, I don't want to work for Boston Dynamics. I want to work for Google, and this is the reason why.
That's where their division's got to be located now, right?
Not necessarily.
Oh.
Because this is the eighth robotics company that Google has acquired in the last 6 months.
Really?
Yeah.
What are they up to?
Nobody knows.
Fantastic.
Nobody has any idea. Yeah, so it's funny because I remember like 2 weeks ago I read this article. It was in regards to Jeff Bezos and the whole, Amazon, what are those things called? The carrier drones and how that was just a giant PR thing and like it just was ridiculous. And obviously, they're not trying to figure out how to make that model work. It was just a really great sales pitch before Black Friday. And we might have talked about this on the show, but the fact that like they were saying that the Google cars, the autonomous cars are clearly like, that's exactly the same thing. It's just a big PR thing. And you made the comment of there's got to be a cheaper way to do PR than building automated cars, which lends credibility to the idea that they're actually legitimately trying to figure out how to do it. I'd say buying six robotics companies in the last year is pretty good indication that they're serious about this kind of stuff. And he asked the question, why are they doing this? And there's two reasons, I guarantee it. One piece of it is they want the brain trust. The guys at Boston Dynamics are geniuses, just brilliant beyond reason. And they're the kind of brains where you can set them to any sort of problem like this, and they'll come up with solutions that nobody else can. They're engineering brilliant, right? They're the type of people that take good ideas and take them to the next 10%. They take ideas that are 85% of the way there, take it the next 10%, give them 95% of the way there. And if you can give them an idea that's really good, that's already 95% of the way, guess what? They're going to give you extra credit. Like, they're great. And, so I think that's why Google bought Boston Dynamics. They're not trying to build walking robots. They're buying the brains. And the big thing with these robots and what's so cool about them is that they're incredibly aware of their surroundings in that they walk up hills, they walk all over the place, and how they manage that and they mitigate the different issues there is requires a lot of, processing of data of your surrounding, of scanning it, different sensors and stuff. And, although there's a big difference between mechanically between driving and walking, navigating between driving and walking is not that different. And that's the big deal here. And that's why I think they bought Boston Dynamics. So they bought the brains behind it, and they brought the navigating ability. Google is incredibly serious about the automated car. And, you know, people are talking about, you know, they might be building robots for their factories, which is entirely possible. What factories? I don't know what they're talking about, but, you know, maybe Google wants to start making factories or warehouses, or they want to do deliveries, or they want to do, and there's all sorts of things that Google wants to get into. But I think the reality of it is, this goes back to our talk last week on why Google bought, or why Apple bought that one company. Why did they buy it? Which company was it? Doesn't matter. You know, but the
touch or something.
Thank you. Exactly. But it's, you know, it's not usually the simplest answer is the real the answer that's most likely. And I think that in this case, you know, the simplest answer is they're really serious about building automated cars, and they need really, really smart people with really fantastic technology to be able to finish the project they're working on. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is them getting serious about it, you know, or more serious. And yeah, but that being said, boy, oh boy, do I want to work for Google right now. Because that's the kind of, that's the, and not just any part of Google, but this part of Google. Of course, right, I'm not smart enough. That's the real problem. I am just not smart enough. And I think I'm a smart dude, but I look at what these guys do and I'm like, nah, I'd be useless there. I'd get them coffee. I'd be smart enough to get them coffee, that's for sure. But, which would be worth it?
That's very cool. I like where, I mean, as much as I know, sounds cool.
Yeah, well,
I'm excited to see what they actually do.
Yeah.
Very cool. You know, it's not totally robotics, but it is bot-like in nature.
Excuse me.
The New York Times has made a bot that it's second guessing NFL coaches on Twitter.
Yeah,
it's pretty funny. So what they do is, right now, what it will do is it analyzes fourth downs in games, and it analyzes it in real time, and then will determine should they punt it, kick a field goal, go for it, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and what's super funny is that if it it would be like, for example, in the, they gave one where it was like the Packers, it was fourth and two, and they were like the Packers ball on the Lions 36, and they were down by three in the second quarter with 12:46 remaining. And the coach said, attempt the field goal. And they were like, and the result was a field goal by Mason Crosby for 54 yards. And the NY bot says, I would have gone for it. And then it goes even deeper. It says, when the game is reasonably close and there's still plenty of time on the clock, the most important thing teams can do is score points. The best measurement I have for that is by using something called expected points, which evaluates on average how many points any situation is worth, even when teams miss a field goal or go for it and fail. It has a whole methodology page. It goes, and here's the breakdown for the Packers scenario. And so, like, so their expected points just wasn't good. And they said that they would have succeeded 60% of the time, fourth and two, at this point in the game. So, like, should have done it. Made a mistake.
I would say there was a big article just, like, 2 weeks ago about the fact that, like, that that from a data perspective, coaches are wrong. They go for field goals way, 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 way too often. And using that same data, they look at it and they sit there and they go with reasonable confidence that coaches should be going for it, especially like this fourth and two scenarios, way more often, because they tend to win the game when they do. But the problem is, you know, the Monday morning quarterback or the Monday morning coaches criticizing them for that decision when it doesn't work out. But the actual data, the actual math is suggesting that coaches, that not only are the Monday morning coaches wrong, but the
the coaches on the sideline are definitely wrong too. You know, they shouldn't be going for the safe bet because it's not safer. It's actually they're more likely to win and get, or more likely to put points on the board if they go for it, and than if they weren't. And let's be honest, it'd be way more exciting, which is all I really care about for my entertainment. So.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what you alluded to is kind of where they were like, yeah, where this is headed. You know, if it's the New York Times could put something together and be able to do some of these real-time data analytics, like, you're going to start to see football coaches have their own Twitter bots.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, they're maybe manually or not, or, you know, inputting the data, and it's telling them, do I go for it or not? And you will watch a lot of those decisions.
Should I go?
You know, get relegated to a computer, or at least, you know, inform, you know, man, the computer's saying I should do it. We make it 60% of the time, and then they, you know. But anyways, yeah, it was just kind of funny. A way that, you know, New York Times, man, their whole data section, they have pretty fun. It sounds like they have a fun time doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be a fun group to work for.
Yeah, definitely.
I think.
You can go work for the New York Times. I'll go work for Google. It'll be a party.
It'll be great. There's another, you know, speaking of tracking data and making recommendations, there's a thing that's been going on with Shoppers. The tracking technology inside of malls and retailers is really starting to take off.
Nice.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, they're literally doing like heat maps, and they're trying to watch where customers are going. And so they're implementing this technology, which totally reminded me of a book that I read a while ago, which was fantastic. If you're ever looking for you know, a book on shopping and how to improve sales, the book is called Why We Buy by Paco Underhill.
Yeah.
And super awesome. This guy, he's a what is that? Is an anthropologist.
Nice. Which,
you know, their job is to observe nature and see what happens. And he just observed shopping centers. And you know, and so companies would come in and they'd hire him and be like, dude, help us improve our store and our sales and stuff like that. And so like he came up with all sorts of, you know, rules, and he learned stuff. Like, for example, the more time someone spent in a store, the more they ended up buying.
Huh.
Yeah, yeah. Like, all right. So his recommendation.
But, you know, that's an important thing to prove out. That's definitely worth, you know, actually saying is definitely true. Even though it feels intuitively true, I can understand why it's good to be able to prove it.
Yeah, well, and I think a lot of people knew that there was a correlation there.
Yeah.
Right? And he goes, no, it's causation. The more time you spend in the store, the more you buy. Which, I think, at least for a while, people would argue the opposite, right? They're like, oh, no, you're just in there a lot because you were going in to buy a lot. And his whole thing is, like, you can influence the amount of time someone spends in a store. And some of them are like one of them's kind of obvious. He's like, just increase interaction. Have more employees. Have them sit there, and while I'm saying this, think Apple Store in the back of your head. you know, have them actually ask good questions, get the customer to talk, be engaged. Don't just leave them alone, because when they're actually talking to you, they'll be spending more time about it, and chances are they will choose to buy it once they're in there. Another one, kind of weird. So he goes, you want to do slow music, because if you do slow music, you walk slower.
Huh.
Therefore, you spend more time in the store. Therefore, you will buy more. Which you're just like, you get done reading the book, and there's a part of you that's like, wow, that was super fascinating, super interesting. And then you walk into a store after reading it, and you just feel sick. Just like, oh my gosh, look at all these things. Well, like other ones, he found, you know, the people filled their baskets with food. And so they did an experiment where they just made, or carts, you know, and so they just made bigger carts. And guess what? People filled their carts with food.
Yeah.
And so he was like, you guys should make bigger basket carts. So you go to a place like Costco, they're ginormous. And, you know, and they have slowly grown over size. I thought another interesting one, you've probably noticed this in stores. He was the one who recommended that they put hand baskets in the middle of the store, not just in the entrance. He's like, because you'll get people like me, and I'm horrible at this, which is why I know it, is I don't grab a basket or a cart, because usually I'm like, oh, only one or two things. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, you know, this is a, you know, this milk is actually cold. I don't want to hold it in my hand anymore, and I got to get, like, maybe, you know, I saw one
where,
other thing.
Okay, where are you shopping where they put baskets in the middle of the stores? Because that seems like a stroke of brilliance, and I think about it all the time, and there are no stores that do that. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, I know. Well, I don't know. The stores I shop at. Winco, do they do it? I don't know. I know Walmart does, for sure. Safeway, so does Target.
Safeway and Trader Joe's do not.
I could see sure. that.
Drives me crazy.
Yeah, but yeah, that, I mean, that's just kind of their, like, yeah, they should be put them in the middle. You know, and then other stuff where he just goes, you know, signs are really, really important. You got to give people directions. You got to let them know what's going on and where things are. Otherwise, you know, they get frustrated and a confused mind says no. And so he's like, just make it very clear. So anyways, it's an amazing book. I highly recommend it. You know, this guy's got years of experience. The problem is that he's probably retired by now. And, you know, and he just has limited time. And so companies are trying to figure out how do we duplicate some of his research, track our own stuff. And so they are turning to technology and sensors to, you know, track what shoppers are doing. And so they're doing stuff where it's like, they were talking about this explicitly for, like, for Black Friday, where they could do, yeah, how do I want to say it? Like, they would notice hot parts of the store or items that were selling really well. And they just, they didn't know it beforehand because, which I'm kind of surprised at, you'd like, you'd think they would notice that they're selling well. And so what they would do is they could then move them to different parts of the store, like, you know, some sort of, I don't know, like lotions or something that are selling well. They can move it to another part of the store that, you know, is getting less activity. And then you'd watch customers, they could watch them migrate over to this other part of the store. And they said they could reduce congestion in real time as a result of these sensors. And, you know, just trying to, which I'm like, apparently congestion is a good thing, so I don't, you know, I'm sure it's all balance.
I think what they want to do is they want to spread it out so that they drag you across the store and nothing, you know, don't put everything into one part of the store so you can go and get everything you want.
Yeah.
Leave, you know, force you to walk around the entire store.
Very true. So, I just thought it was very interesting that, yeah, these shoppers, these stores have been doing that a lot, and now they're starting to automate the process and do it all in real time. And
yeah, that's cool. That is really interesting.
I thought it was interesting. In other news, I should probably, yeah.
Do you want me to go, or do you want to
just keep it? Let me roll one more, and then you can go for a while. So Square came out with a new card reader.
It's true.
And I actually just want to touch on this one very quickly.
Okay.
And it was just this one line in Wired that I just thought was super interesting. Little background, Apple has a Lightning plug connector. The guy who made that went over to Square to help them redo their card reader. Instead of doing off-the-shelf stuff, they made one for their own, you know, custom. And so it says, at one point in development, they found that the level of contact they needed to successfully transfer data from the card resulted in a swipe that felt too loose. And when the swipe felt too loose, it felt like it wasn't working and would thus require another swipe. So they increased the friction above what was actually needed, an adjustment that was overkill from a technical point of view, but resulted in a swipe that felt perfect to the hand.
Yeah.
Ah, I love good design.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. It just is, it sounds beautiful that they actually, you know, paid attention to that sort of thing, where, you know, it'd be so easy to design that all ahead of time and just kind of go, this is what's required, put it all in, ask if it works, does it function, in it from a technological perspective, and answer that question quickly and easily, yes, it does, only to find that it actually doesn't because people don't like how it feels, you know, and you know, that's what Apple is notoriously good at, and you can tell that, you know, this guy is a product of that mindset, you know, and
yeah, they made it. He managed to make it 45% smaller, which is pretty crazy. And so they're going to continue to go on a kick butt. And I just, you know, especially when you have design ideas like that.
I have a tangentially related question. Did my friend get in touch with you about his potential partnership with Square?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, we talked. I think I talked to him for a couple hours.
Oh, wow.
That's
awesome.
What I do. Yeah. You know, we talked about Square and some of its, you know, where it's strong, where it could improve. I gave him my perspective on it from a landlord perspective. And, or my thoughts, maybe, and why I wouldn't use it yet and how it would need to improve for me to be interested in it. We also just talked about interviewing in general and how to ask good interview questions and how to prepare, which my number, like my very first question with him, you know, which any product company is going to ask, you know, is, well, what do you think of the product? Have you used it? Have you tried it? You know, to which he was like, no. I was like, okay. Bad answer.
Learn how to lie.
No, what I said was, look, I'm not saying you have to go out and buy one because it doesn't necessarily make sense to get one or whatever. I was like, but go to a local place that's using it and ask them if you can play with it. Buy some stuff with it. Ask them all sorts of questions. Get super interested.
Especially since his best friend's roommate uses it whenever she cuts our hair. You know. It's not like it's hard to get a hold of one, but
yeah. And so I was like, I mean, if you talk to like a, you know, go to a coffee shop or something, that way when they ask you, what do you think? You go, well, I actually spent some time researching it and visiting local retailers to get their thoughts and opinions on it. And you can talk about the three things that you thought were amazing about it. And then the three ways that you would like to, that it should be improved given the feedback that you got from those local retailers. I was like, that would be a much better answer than
Good. Yeah.
That's good advice for any job that you're applying.
Well, I'm glad you got a chance to talk to him as long and short of what I was.
Yeah. We'll see if he gets it or not.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's got a we'll see. If he gets it, we'd better get an interview. That's all I'm saying.
He also asked me, you know, he's like, what's more important, you know, going for your dream job that may not pay as much or just going for a job that pays a lot that you may not be in love with? It's like, ooh, that's an important question to ask.
That is a big question. That is a difficult question, one that we have discussed before, because there is a price where it might make sense to, you know, if you only have to work for 2 or 3 years at a job that pays ridiculously well, but it then allows you to move on to do a job that you'd rather do, does that make a lot more sense than, you know?
Yeah.
But that is totally besides the point. When the point is, have you seen the new anti-cord cutting campaign?
I have not.
That the cable company has put together. This is fantastic.
That I don't know how I would see it, but.
Well, it's an internet-based one because that's who they're trying to aim towards.
Fair enough. Okay.
Basically, which one is it? The National Cable and Telecommunications Association. It's the main trade association for the cable operators. They've put together a series of commercials that are called The Whole Saga. And they're basically a series of like online commercials, and if you go to the website, we'll have a link to this page where it'll link to the commercials. But essentially, what it is it's trying to argue for don't cut your cable out. It's trying to convince people to stick with cable,
and it's ridiculous. There are these like super over the top, dumb, campy commercials where these guys have big holes in them if they're not, if they don't have a cable, and they're put into these situations where they're difficult situations. One example is about a bike rider who like runs into a rabbit, and he wants to engage with the rabbit, and you're asked to choose whether or not he's got cable or not. And if he's got it, he sees a video where he sees a newscast where he's told about these rabbits being rabid and going to kill him. And if he doesn't have cable, he doesn't see that newscast and gets attacked by the rabbits. But it's stupid. It's really dumb. And it's interesting that this is like, this is definitely the direction that it's going, because they're trying to, you know, they are taking notice of the fact that people are not using, or people are starting to cut the cable. And, you know, I think it's, what I think is interesting about it is that it's like, you know, you and I, well, technically I have cable, but I never use it. But for cable cutters, people who don't use cable, sometimes you don't even notice the fact that, or you don't notice what you don't have, which is horrifying to them. Because, you know, forever, their whole model was based on the fact that you'd go to work, everybody would talk about the cool TV show they saw over the weekend, and you would be painfully aware of what you don't have. Mm-hmm. And whereas that just doesn't exist anymore. And so now they're trying to draw your attention to it, which I think is really indicative of a problem and for them. And then they went and did it with some of the worst commercials that have ever aired on national TV.
Classic.
Yeah, it is definitely worth, well, it didn't air on national TV, I guess, but it's definitely worth checking out because they're bad.
I clicked on a link and no video showed up.
Really?
Really. It says, the whole saga, sorry you missed it. To find out how cable connects you to the people and things you love, go to ncta.com.
Whoa. That's funny. They took it down. They took it down. I wonder if they were getting enough bad press that they decided to, you know, cut their losses. Huh. I'm sure you can find it somewhere online, but Google it. We're not going to.
Okay.
But... yeah, that's funny. What's that? Another big news piece: Ubuntu Touch, the Linux based thing.
Uh huh.
Oh wait, no, I don't want. Sorry. I'm gonna skip around a little bit. So okay. Right after the anti-cord cutters, big media companies are paving the way for cord cutters. So this is kind of exciting. So you got companies like Apple, not Apple, Disney. Who else is doing this?
Viacom.
Yeah. What they're doing is they're setting up what they call multi-channel video programming distributors, or virtual MVPDs. And what they essentially are is a multi-channel video program distributor is a cable company.
Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple. Comcast would be an example of this. What do they have? Multiple channels. What are they doing? Video programming, and they're distributing it.
Okay.
And that's always been delivered, you know, through these very traditional routes to your TV. Essentially, what's going on is these companies are setting up a virtual version of that, which is to say something for the internet. So what's cool about this is instead of using a cable box that connects to a cable company, essentially what you'll do is you'll connect to a server through an IP address, and it'll do the exact same thing. And it has all the same legal, you know, it'll have the same legal paradigm as a cable company. Effectively what it is it's a cable company, but without the cable. It just runs over the internet, which is kind of cool. And the reason why it's cool, you know, in that it's moving somewhere. It's an acknowledgement of the fact that the traditional paradigm of how cable works just isn't going to be the future. You know, you're going to be able to get your highest definition content through high-speed internet in the future, and so they're going to have to make the transition. It just doesn't make any sense to do it with the way that they're doing it. And
This is the start of it. Now, hopefully what happens is this kind of legal framework and a low bar to entry will make it possible for more cable companies and more competition. Because you're not going to be, because the big deal is you don't have to run over Comcast's, you know, you don't have to, Comcast can't have a local monopoly because they own all the cables in an area. As long as you get, you know, cable from Comcast, you should be able to connect to one of these virtual MVPDs. And then so Disney can go ahead and license their content to different virtual MVPDs, cable companies, and then you can just run it over the internet. So hopefully, you know, as we try to figure out the future of what cable looks like and what entertainment looks like, and as we move away from the more traditional cable networks, this will help kind of work as a transitionary purpose. It's really easy to think of Apple setting up one of these and running stuff through their server and, you know, getting their own licenses with different companies to do this and running it all through the Apple TV or Google or whoever. So they're making it easier, which is very exciting because I just like watching this kind of transition stuff. It doesn't make that big of a difference to me because I don't watch that much TV. But, you know, and what I watch way later than everybody else. That's the biggest thing is I never watch it on time or I buy it. So, okay. Kind of wraps that up. Back to Ubuntu Touch. So Ubuntu Touch, they did that giant Indiegogo project that didn't take off because they were looking for like $32 million and like eight of it. but, you know, everybody was still excited about it. Everybody wants, not everybody, but a few people want an Ubuntu phone. It's always great to have another solid competitor in there, and I think it's awesome technology. If I had the money, I'd definitely buy whatever comes out first. Well, good news. Ubuntu finally got their first cellular mobile phone partner. So
cool.
So after 7 years of being in development, the thing is ready to be put onto a phone, and they're going to get their first piece of hardware, which is cool. It's not going to be in America, which is not cool, but, you know, it's better to start somewhere than nowhere.
Totally.
And hopefully it'll be heading our way soon across the pond.
Nice. Do they say when it'll come out?
Maybe. The Linux-based OS, but said it will offer high-end phones in 2014. We have concluded our first set of agreements to ship Ubuntu on mobile phones. We're shifted gears to
2014 is pretty fast.
Yeah, that's next year.
Which is like 2 weeks away.
Yes.
I guess it could be the end of next year, but all right.
Yeah. Probably not going to be ready for CES, I think is the long and short of it, but probably the end of the year. But speaking of Linux,
cool.
So this is another big Linux thing that's going on right now. Steam OS officially got released to the world on Friday. I have not downloaded it yet, but I want to. I just don't know
what I would do with it. Do you have a machine that you can do that on?
I can always boot camp it onto my Mac.
I guess that's true.
But it kind of defeats the purpose, so I'm not going to. And I'm just not. I'm not good enough with Linux. I mean, it would be fun, but you know, the reality of it is, I want so. I'm going to wait until they just shipped their all of their Steam boxes, all of their Steam machines to their beta testers. And I didn't get one. Jerks. I know. But I'm going to...
Do you want one?
No.
Okay.
I might have failed to uphold my end of the bargain. but, you know, it's cool. It's really exciting. I'm very excited to see where this goes and kind of see what developments go on with it. And, you know, we'll see. I'm figuring that probably mid next year I want to get one, and at this point I'm kind of leaning towards the idea of buying something that somebody else makes. But we'll see.
we'll see what happens. All I know is I'm excited. It's cool I love technology.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, and from what I've read,
see that CES, which will be neat.
Yeah, very neat. And from what everything I've read, people are really, really, really happy with what Valve has done. Where it's like,
well, they know software, so it's not like, you know, they're total noobs to that space.
Right. But the big thing is that they've what the heck? Don't do that, Ars Tech. Where did I read it? I don't think it was in this article. But what they said is basically they gave enough tools of Linux where, although, like, you know, you've got, it's obviously a Steam machine and that's kind of like the skin that goes over it, you can kind of get into the Linux part of the machine really easily. It's a full-blown computer and it's just an easy interface for playing video games most of the time, which... most of the people who were most excited about the fact that this was a Linux project, that was what they were really hoping for. They were hoping that they weren't going to take Linux and strip away anything that makes it Linux, you know, and then just have the video game console, because that kind of defeats the point, in their mind. And I like the idea of them straddling the line of it's open source, it's hackable, you can do all sorts of cool stuff to it. But it runs really well if you just leave it the way it is. Sort of like current versions of Android. Yeah, you can do all sorts of fun, you know, stuff and break into it, but if you just leave it the way it is, it runs really well. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for. It's my dream. And it'll be cool. I'm excited. I am excited.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'll live vicariously through you.
Sounds good.
But. Hey, total side thought here.
Yeah.
If you could get a hold of Google Glass, would you be interested in it?
Do I have to pay for it?
Yes.
Well, this is a really... It's interesting that you would ask this question, because I've already had to make this decision once this week. And I came down on the side of I don't think I could justify the expense. It's ridiculous. Okay. Why?
Then I'm going to put it out there to anyone who's listening to this tech podcast. If you're interested in getting glass on your face for a mere $1,500, I have a friend, Mr. David Perry, who's been on this podcast, who has a pair of glasses, has 3 invites to give out.
Oh.
And he said he's willing to give them out to people who are actually going to buy them. And so I said, you might be interested. I obviously was not, because I'm a cheapskate. But that's not true. I'm frugal. I'm smart with my money.
Keegan, a former and also an occasional contributor to the podcast, got an invite and was of a similar mind to me, which is, I can, but I won't, because I have other things I need to spend my money on, and asked me if I wanted to be recommended for one of the invites, and I was like, well, I'd give the same response, so it's hard for me to say yes. But almost, yeah. They're starting to get out there. I mean, it's kind of losing its cool factor. It's not losing its factor. But...
Okay, just out of curiosity, what's your price again
for 500? I think I'd do 500 now today.
What about a year from now?
Well, they said a year from now it'll be 300.
Oh, did they say 300?
I thought they said 200 to 300. You know, actually, you know what? You know, it's funny. You know what I really said? My biggest problem is that it's not the 1500 for the glasses, which is kind of ridiculous. But that's not my biggest problem. It's the fact that I'd also have to go out and buy a phone.
Wait, what?
Because
that works with your iPhone.
What? It works with your iPhone?
Yeah.
Oh. I don't know that. When did that happen?
I was rethinking. I don't know. Yeah, totally works.
I'm not rethinking that much.
Okay. All right. Got it. if you are interested, DM me somewhere. Twitter, Facebook, Google+, my website, jamesfrapola.com, whatever. Yeah. Leave a comment. Yeah.
You can talk to me, too, also, James.
Yeah. What else you got, man? Since we started late, I'm starting to run out of steam.
Yeah, me too. I'm gonna blow through my last two stories. speaking of video games, I realize I should have done this transition when we were speaking of SteamOS. Oculus Rift raised $75 million during their second round of funding. This time, it's for going into full blown production. They're making it for consumers.
About time.
I know, super exciting. I still haven't gotten to use one, and I really want to. I think I'm thinking about making it a mission of mine to seek one out and try it out, because they look incredible. I seem really cool. And then also, this is a shameless endorsement of my favorite company. Tesla's made noises that they will be announcing their Model E, and it's slated for a reveal in Detroit in 2015. Yep. And it's going to be a $40,000 car, is what they're talking about. But they haven't actually revealed it yet, and they won't for 2 years. So I'm not even quite sure why we're talking about it, other than are they like the company, and I like talking about them.
And it puts a car within, well, you should never buy a new car. But, you know, when they become used, it puts them within that price range that's actually feasible.
Yeah, not ridiculous.
He had a cool talk, just since we're also on it, where I think it was Kevin Rose who was interviewing him.
Yeah.
And they were talking about innovation and barriers that people put up, and he was like, you know, when the car first came out, he was like, people were like, these things will never take off. He's like, there's grass everywhere. Your horse just let it eat. Like, whereas there's no gas stations anywhere, so your range on where you can take your car is very limited. It's like, plus people love their, you know, their buggy whips and the click clop, and you know, you take your time and experience nature instead of speeding through it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he was like, these people had all these reasons why the car would never work, and he's like, and we're in the same situation here where people are like, oh, electric cars will never work. There's not enough electric stations. So even if you could go far, you don't have the infrastructure for it. And he's like, yep, that's what they said way back when. And look what happened. So anyways, just kind of a fun, you know, we'll see. Obviously, it's a different situation than it was then. Because the cars were, well, because you got a lot more from the transition from a horse to a car than I think you do from gas to electric.
That's
you know,
true.
You're still going in the same speed. You still have the same comforts. You know, it's different. So it's not.
Yeah. Did you hear that? What's his name? Leonardo DiCaprio he dropped a ton of money into building an electric Formula One car.
No.
Yeah, they're trying to just raise awareness on the capabilities of electric cars, and so they're building a Formula One car, and they're going to have it compete.
I wish I had stupid amounts of money to do stuff like
that. Me too, because that sounds fun.
Finally, this is just kind of funny, so I have to share it. We're coming up to the holiday season, and you may be going on vacation and not being near your computer. And this company, I don't know what in the world their name is, Relaxed, that's it. They have set up a system which is like a out-of-the-office automatic replies for your social networks, not just for email anymore. So you connect Relaxed to Twitter and Facebook. And then if anyone writes on your Facebook wall or mentions you on Twitter or sends you a private message, you can give a reply. Thanks for the post. I'm currently on vacation and can't respond. I will when I get back.
Wow.
How awesome is that?
That's funny. Man. Wow.
So if you're that person who is so connected and don't want to leave your followers in the lurch because somehow they didn't read your status update that you were going on an awesome vacation, you have a way. Via Relaxed. One of those, again, you're like, it's a smart idea. Clearly, you know, I could see where someone had a need for that, but yeah. There it is. Pretty funny. there's your holiday guide for you to help you just get away and not have to worry about it. You can be, wait for it, relaxed.
Oh, baby.
During your vacation. So, there you go, man. That was a lot. We started off talking about Disney and Nintendo, Snapchat versus SpaceX, Google Fiber, the Fitbit, some health-related things, some robots, some bots, the Square thing, the whole saga, Aereo TVs, Ubuntu, and then more video games. Mentioned Google Glass, Oculus, Tesla, Twitter, Facebook. There. That was the show right there. You got
How
it
How do
all.
You say what? We've never done that before. This show in review.
I don't know. I felt need to
felt to good.
Add a bow.
Yeah.
Around it. So that's what we just did. Everybody, thank you for joining us. We really do appreciate it. My name, I'll do this right. My name is James Furlow. I'm not going to do this right. Oh my gosh, I'm pathetic at this. What do I got to set this to? I need to do this to, come on, where are you? 16.
I believe in you, James. I believe in you.
I know. Well, the problem is I'm going to play a music and I changed something. I'll get this. So, I don't know, what am I going to call you? My fire-breathing, gold-loving, mountain-dwelling brother is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time. Thank you.